Trochet is one of the fathers of this music that we call jazz.
Every song would tell a story, and in the story there's, you know, highs and lows, excitement, passion, drama, sadness, joy, climax, resolution. You could hear all of those things in this music.
Basically, almost any time the soprano is used, I hear an echo of Bechet.
He could be a ferocious, wild man. At the same time, there was this beautiful gentleness in his music.
When Sidney Bechet played, the walls trembled, the pulse accelerated, and the heart skipped a beat. His was a passion and energy transformed into musical notes. I'm Nancy Wilson, and on this edition of Jazz Profiles, we pay tribute to saxophonist and composer Sidney Bechet, one of New Orleans' great jazz innovators. In his biography of Bechet, John Chilton called him the Wizard of Jazz. Chilton still remembers a night in 1949 when he heard Bechet in London.
I can remember the upper balcony actually shook. It actually waved up and down, almost like as though it were rubber. It was a very extraordinary feeling. The other counter feeling going simultaneously was nobody was in any fear. It was almost like a mystical moment. There was this man on stage blowing his heart out, and everyone was tapping their feet in time in the music, and it was as though the place had, was, as I say, bending. I mean, if you think the British are reserved, you wouldn't have on that particular occasion. Such was the magic of Bechet.
The magic came from his sound, a big, vibrant sound that would dominate and lead. But it's the soul behind the instrument that keeps us listening. Dr. Michael White is a musician and educator in New Orleans.
Bechet was like a thunderstorm, just raw, and he just let out all the stops. He just cannonballed his way through, and not always in a rough manner, but he was just so strong and so present. He was ferocious. There's so much in Bechet's playing that, you know, it's hard for others to match that level of diversity and that level of expression.
Bechet has been credited with pioneering the use of the soprano saxophone as a solo instrument. So in many ways, he ushered in modern jazz, where the individual voice is allowed to soar and experiment. Dan Morgenstern, director of the Institute for Jazz Studies in Newark, New Jersey.
I mean, that is the breakthrough. That is the great individual creator breaking out of a collective mold and really establishing a new kind of way of playing music.
Sidney Bechet's passionate and precise use of the soprano saxophone is unmistakable. He was intense and somewhat enigmatic, and he influenced generations of musicians, from Johnny Hodges to Bob Wilbur and Branford Marsalis.
Well, he was always a modern musician. That's what made him exceptional. He and Louis Armstrong and Duke Ellington and all of those guys from that period, they were modern musicians. They were not trying to capture a style or a period or a point in time. They were constantly moving ahead.
From the moment Bechet picked up an instrument, music became his language and obsession. He borrowed his brother's clarinet in 1902 at the age of 5. From then on, his life was dedicated to unravel the mystery of the music. Bechet was a child prodigy, and he understood from a very early age the magic and power of music.
From the time he was a preteen, he was playing like he was on fire.
Dr. Bruce Rayburn is curator of the Hogan Jazz Archive at Tulane University in New Orleans.
So that's what appeals to me. It's really the feeling and the spirit, but of course his technical virtuosity is what makes it possible for him to communicate such a broad range of feeling.
Sidney Bechet came from a Creole family where classical music education was the norm. Yet to his parents' dismay, he preferred the music of the streets and clubs. At 13, he was already a professional musician. He learned with every musician who would let him play along with them. There are many anecdotes about this young musician and his intuitive sense of music. Bruce Rayburn recalls a story recorded in a 1959 interview with New Orleans drummer Paul Barbarin.
There are stories that Paul Barbarin tells, for example, of using Sidney to replace a clarinet player and going to a pawn shop, and the only thing they had left in the way of a clarinet was this old yellow thing that had rubber bands and it was held together by chewing gum. And Bechet tried it out, found where the bad notes were, and simply avoided them and sounded marvelous on this really dilapidated instrument. Very few people could pull that off.
And Bechet didn't have no clarinet. I remember this, I recall that good, because I used to follow all the bands. So they said, we're going to get him a clarinet. The wagon pulls up with the horse in it, up at a pawn shop, and went and got an old clarinet. Looked like it was like a banana, sort of. I mean, the color of a banana.
Yeah.
Color of a banana, because it's kind of yellow. Uh-huh. And man, I don't know how long that clarinet had been in that pawn shop. And Bechet fixed a reed on there, and I know some of the notes didn't blow. Man, that man could play. Wow, what came out that clarinet. And the notes that didn't work, he didn't mind that. He didn't mind that at all. That man was great.
In his autobiography, Treated Gentle, Bechet writes,
"Most people, they think they make themselves. Well, in a way they do, but they don't give enough credit to all the things around them, the things they take from somebody else when they're doing something and creating it. Things like what it is you remember, or how you feel, or what you're going to do. Things like being a kid and waiting in a field for the late afternoon to be night, like standing by a river. Like remembering the first time you heard the music, who it was playing it, things like that. They're just life."
And life for Sidney Bechet was music.
My father was a perfectionist about his instrument. He practiced a lot every day, and the way he can be a very, play like a virtuoso, you know.
Daniel Bechet was 5 years old when his father died. He lives in France and is a drummer.
He was very a splendid character, you know, with a lot of humor, with a lot of funny or serious, and a lot with his art, and he gave a lot of his soul, you know.
Et maintenant, petite fleur.
I'm Nancy Wilson, and this is NPR's Jazz Profiles. When you hear Bechet's music, you hear New Orleans, and when you think of New Orleans, you think of the birthplace of jazz. Sidney Bechet was born there on May 14th, 1897. It was an effervescent time for the music. Again, Bruce Rayburn.
The environment in New Orleans at the turn of the century when Sidney was coming up was one of extreme creativity because dance music was changing. Young people were impacting on the dance scene, and they didn't want to do waltzes, and they didn't want to do schottisches or quadrilles. They wanted to do the shag, the belly rub, the slow drag. And ultimately, the dancing was becoming liberated, and the music was becoming liberated, too. So the blues began infiltrating dance music, ragtime, jazz, marches. There was an extremely eclectic trick bag of musical styles to draw on, and what you found was Sidney was one of the most creative, one of the most spirited and impassioned of the lot, and for a little kid to kind of lead the way was exceptional, and to me is a perfect example of how the human spirit exerts itself and influences the course history takes.
This is how Bichet describes New Orleans in his book.
New Orleans, that was a place where the music was natural as the air. The people were ready for it like it was sun and rain. A musicianer, when he played in New Orleans, was home. And the music, when he played it, would go right to where he sent it. The people there were waiting for it. They were wanting it.
No matter what he was playing, Bichet was passionate, intense, omnivorous in his appetite not only for music, but for life. He was also restless, always looking for what was just around the corner. As soon as he reached the age of 16, he started traveling, first through the Deep South with pianist and singer Clarence Williams. Later, after playing with the famous King Oliver Band in 1919, he went to Chicago, New York, and Europe.
Voici Binet Bichet.
Along the way, he gathered the stories and experiences that would be told through his music. Soprano saxophonist Bob Wilbur was a student of Bichet in the late 40s.
And his way was basically that you must tell a story to communicate with the listener was of paramount importance. The idea is that you would start out playing the melody of a song and familiarize the listener with the sound of the melody, and then you would gradually develop variations and take the listener into all different areas, and then at the end bring him back to the melody. In other words, it was like theater, where you tell a story, you establish a character, and then you take the character through various events and everything. And this was very important to him.
Of Sidney Bechet.
You know, there's this mood about the music, a kind of need to be moving. You just can't set it down and hold it. Those Dixieland musicianers, they tried to do that. They tried to write the music down and kind of freeze it. Even when they didn't arrange it to death, they didn't have any place to send it. That's why they lost it. You just can't keep the music unless you move with it.
Bechet's words are about his search for new directions in music, but he also gives us a hint about his wanderlust. Wherever his wanderings took him, like a troubadour, Bechet left behind a trail of converts. Dan Morgenstern.
He went on the road and did all kinds of things. He performed in shows. He toured in vaudeville. And then, of course, he went to Europe very early on with the great Will Marion Cook and his Southern Syncopated Orchestra, and that was when he was heard by the Swiss conductor Ernest Ansermé, who then wrote that famous piece about the orchestra where he singled Bechet out for praise. He's one of the most remarkable musicians he had ever heard, and then wound up by saying that he spoke to Bechet, and Bechet didn't have much to say. He was probably, you know, a little embarrassed or tongue-tied or whatever, but he said that he followed his own way. And then Ansermé says, well, that way may be the highway that the rest of the world is going to swing along in the future. And that is actually what happened. I mean, Bechet is one of the fathers of this music that we call jazz.
Sidney Bechet was always aware of the New Orleans tradition that nurtured and inspired him. But like any true artist, he was never afraid of breaking the established patterns to create his own voice. So in Sidney Bechet, as in Louis Armstrong, we find both old and new approaches. Michael White.
Before Armstrong and Bechet, New Orleans jazz was largely a collective music where the individual's gifts would be utilized primarily as a part of the collective ensemble. But through the expansion of breaks, which are stops in the music where a person plays for a couple of bars by himself, the expansion of breaks and the idea of the solo, they were so skilled at developing that that became a main feature of the jazz performance, and therefore eventually shifted the whole direction of jazz from this collective approach to improvising to an approach in which the solo is the main feature.
Dan Morgenstern.
I mean, he and Armstrong are the first two great soloists, and they really shape the language of the music with their rhythmic imagination and their melodic imagination.
Sidney Bechet and Louis Armstrong.
Mama said you take the T and P, I'll take the L and N. We got to be lucky, honey, to ever meet again.
Bechet's trademark is in the way he uses the instrument. He started with the clarinet. When he discovered the soprano saxophone in a store in London, Bechet decided to conquer this most difficult of instruments. It became his voice.
Vibrato, the energy, and the soaring quality. You know, as soon as he begins to improvise, then he seems to be transported, and he certainly transports the listener.
Trumpeter and writer John Chilton.
These soaring phrases and the shape and the exact moment, split second, in which he can take a dramatic pause. I mean, he really is a master musician. The fact that he was also a great improviser is a bonus for us listeners.
Michael White.
If you look at Sidney Bechet's music as an improviser, he is a person who believed in utilizing a full range of his instrument, and he had complete technical facility and control over the soprano saxophone as well as the clarinet. Thank you.
soprano saxophonist Bob Wilbur.
He made a blues record called Blue Horizon, which was 4 minutes of improvised blues on the clarinet, in which it was a piece of composition from the first note to the last note, improvised composition. And he started out in the lower register of the clarinet with a very sweeping blues phrase. It went something like this. See if I can sing it.
We didn't do babo do dee da da do do wow.
Sidney Bechet touches a world of saxophonists. That's just ahead. I'm Nancy Wilson. You're listening to a tribute to saxophonist and composer Sidney Bechet on Jazz Profiles from NPR, National Public Radio. The words of Sidney Bechet from his autobiography, Treat It Gentle.
You take when a high note comes through, lifting and going and then stopping because there's no place else for it to go. That's stepping music. It's got to rush itself right off your voice or your horn because it's so excited. You can feel it. People, they go looking for music, you know, needing it. And the music, it's any damn thing. It's whatever it is you need. All the music I play is from what was finding itself in my grandfather's time. It was like water moving around a stone, all silent, waiting for the stone to wear away.
Bob Wilbur.
He called his autobiography Treat It Gentle, and he was talking about the soprano saxophone, which can be kind of a wild beast of an instrument. If you don't tame it, it's like taming a wild horse. It can play you rather than you playing it. So you treat it gentle.
Once a musician masters the instrument, the challenge is to push its boundaries as far as possible. And Bechet pushed them through all sorts of styles. Michael White.
He incorporated elements of different musical styles. You can hear the influence of opera. Sometimes he almost sounds like a cello player. Sometimes he sounds like an opera singer. Sometimes he sounds like a blues singer. He's able to take the essence of different genres and bring them together through his instrument.
Thank you.
an incredible improviser because there was a lot of passion and excitement in his music, a lot of ferocity, a lot of gentleness at the same time. I mean, he showed many different sides and aspects to his playing, to his solos, as much as you could say he had as a person.
That versatility, that passion, caught the ears of Duke Ellington. Bechet only stayed a short time in Ellington's band, but he left a lasting impression. John Chilton.
Duke Ellington said that Sidney Bechet was the most extraordinary jazz musician of them all. And there's no doubt in my mind that Bechet's playing was an inspiration to Duke Ellington. He even took Bechet into the band temporarily, almost as a coach, so that Bechet could coach. And bear in mind that the musicians that Duke Ellington employed were no slouches. They were excellent players. But Bechet presented them with a challenge in that he could perform almost wonderfully under all circumstances. Such was his genius. Duke Ellington wanted that sort of feeling in the band, but he also wanted himself to be exposed to this fountain of ideas that was coming out.
One of the best ways of describing Ellington's admiration for Bechet is in the presence of saxophonist Johnny Hodges. Johnny Hodges studied with Bechet in the early 1920s and played with him in Harlem at the famous Club Basha in 1925. 3 years later, Hodges joined the Duke Ellington Band and remained as a soloist for the next 40 years.
So think of all the people that Duke Ellington's influenced, and you get some idea of the Bechet River and its tributaries.
John Chilton, author of the biography Sidney Bechet, Wizard of Jazz.
Bechet, through his work on soprano saxophone, influenced Coleman Hawkins, who was the father of the tenor saxophone. Benny Carter says he could never forget the impact that Bechet's music made on him. Benny Carter became one of the leading alto sax players. So we've got two people who were the inspiration for dozens of later musicians.
Bechet also influenced musicians like saxophonist Wayne Shorter and John Coltrane. Coltrane even composed a blues for Bechet.
Thank you.
Soprano saxophonist Bob Wilbur is considered one of Bichet's natural heirs. His band, Bob Wilbur's Bichet Legacy, is dedicated to playing the music of his mentor and teacher. In the 40s, Wilbur was a live-in student in Bichet's house in Brooklyn.
I moved in with him, and then when he went to work on 52nd Street, which was, of course, the famous swing street of that era in New York, I would go along with him. And about midnight, he'd always beckon to me, and I'd come up and play with him for about 3 hours until we closed up the place at 3 or 4 in the morning. And then if he was feeling in a good mood, he'd say, come on, let's go up to Harlem and have some fun.
Well, several of Sidney Bechet's encounters with people were legendary, you know. He used to like to go in clubs, particularly in New York, where a lot of reputations were made.
Michael White.
One story that I really liked a lot was that the great Coleman Hawkins had made a remark that New Orleans musicians couldn't play. So somebody told that to Bechet, and Sidney Bechet issued out a challenge. This was like a duel. And he said, have Mr. Hawkins meet me at a certain place at a certain time, this club, and we'll see who can play what. And Coleman Hawkins was a phenomenal, great musician. I mean, one of the greatest in jazz also. And he had this big tenor saxophone with this gigantic sound. Said that Bechet opened up with some of what they called his variations, that is playing a lot of riffs based on the chords and a lot of exciting rhythmic type figures. And they said by the end of the evening, he wore Coleman Hawkins out. Such to a point that Coleman Hawkins packed up his horn and started to leave, which is a sign of defeat. You know, you're giving up. And as he went out of the club, Bechet started to follow him. And they say he followed Coleman Hawkins out of the club, onto the street, still playing the whole while in his ear. And Coleman Hawkins got in a cab. And he said, okay, all right, you can play. Now leave me alone.
I'm Nancy Wilson. It's NPR's Jazz Profiles with a tribute to Sidney Bechet.
What's that jive, man?
Pumping,
well, take it. Then pop into a dancer's new. It's something like the Susie Q. Your partner and we always do. You do the left and do the right, but don't you hold me too tight. They pop into this simple thing. Your hips have got to do the thing. Remember, you have got to swing. You do the left and do the right, but don't you hold it too tight. Swing it,
yeah,
but not too fast. Jump it,
yeah,
easy, then your jive will last. They're popping all the jitterbugs to back your mama's carpet rug. Remember, you have got to muck. You do the left and do the right, but don't you hold it too tight.
It's difficult to categorize Sidney Bechet. He covered so many areas in music. He played ballads, show music, ragtime, traditional, swing, Caribbean, and much more. So Bechet often said that the title of New Orleans traditional musician was too narrow for him.
Thank you.
Bichet, who was particularly interested in opera, also wrote songs and even composed the score for a ballet.
It was a piece that was originally called The Voice of the Slaves, and then he finally got a chance to record it in the 50s in France with a symphony orchestra. And it's music that combines the symphonic influence of 19th century, really, classical music, with the blues, and he also is a featured soloist with this orchestra.
One of Sidney Bechet's most memorable recordings is his version of George Gershwin's Summertime. Jazz critic Will Friedwald.
That's just an amazing record. It's almost opera-like in its structure, the way Bechet starts out and the way he builds into these variations on the tune, and the way he, you know, at certain points in the thing he's praying, at certain points in the tune he's barking, he's making these kind of animal noises, and at the same time it's rapturous and he's singing a love song all at the same time. It's really an amazing set of variations on the George Gershwin theme. I think that's one of the real defining jazz solos of all time.
It isn't easy to capture the essence of Sidney Bechet. His music encompasses the history of African-American music, from blues to bebop. Bechet the man remains an enigma. In old photos, you often see him completely absorbed in his instrument. Yet he was also a savvy showman who would use the power and vibrancy of his instrument to captivate audiences. Sidney Bechet died in Paris on his birthday, May 14, 1959, at the age of 62. Every jazz soloist and jazz itself owes a debt to Sidney Bechet for his pioneering spirit and musicianship.
The blues and the spirituals and the remembering and the waiting and the suffering and the looking at the sky watching the dark come down, that's all inside the music. And somehow when the music is played right, it does an explaining of all those things. Me, I want to explain myself so bad. I want to have myself understood. And the music, it can do that. The music is my whole story.
Our tribute to Sidney Bechet was written and produced by Elizabeth Perez Luna. Engineered by Lynn Persky at Toucan Productions. Special thanks to Antoine Desjardins and to Pascal Bechet. Bechet's autobiography, Treated Gentle, is published by DeCapo Press. Excerpts were narrated by Kermit Frazier. Jazz Profiles is produced by Tim Owens. Assistant producer, Madeline Smith. The executive producers are Mary Beth Kirshner and Murray Horwitz. To email us or for more information about this and other programs in our series, contact us through NPR's homepage on the World Wide Web at npr.org. That's npr.org. Major support for Jazz Profiles comes from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund, helping people to make the arts part of their everyday lives. Additional support has been provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts. I'm Nancy Wilson. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Thanks for listening. To hear more programs in this series, go to npr.org/jazzprofiles.